Chapter 25. A needle threaded with black thread neatly in the bosom of her gown, and put on her outer clothing smartly, at a little glass behind the door, in which I saw the reflection of her pleased face. All this I observed, sitting at the table in the corner with my head leaning on my hand, and my thoughts running on very different things. The chaise soon came round to the front of the shop, and the baskets being put in first, I was put in next, and those three followed. I remember it as a kind of half-chaise cart, half-pianoforte van, painted of a somber color, and drawn by a black horse with a long tail. There was plenty of room for us all. I do not think I have ever experienced so strange a feeling in my life. I am wiser now, perhaps, as that of being with them, remembering how they had been employed, and seeing them enjoy the ride. I was not angry with them, I was more afraid of them, as if I were cast away among creatures with whom I had no community of nature. They were very cheerful. The old man sat in front to drive, and the two young people sat behind him, and whenever he spoke to them leaned forward, the one on one side of his chubby face, and the other on the other, and made a great deal of him. They would have talked to me too, but I held back, and moped in my corner, scared by their love-making and hilarity, though it was far from boisterous, and almost wondering that no judgment came upon them for their hardness of heart. So, when they stopped to bait the horse, and ate and drank and enjoyed themselves, I could touch nothing that they touched, but kept my fast unbroken. So, when we reached home, I dropped out of the chaise behind, as quickly as possible, that I might not be in their company before those solemn windows, looking blindly on me like closed eyes once bright. And oh, how little need I had had to think what would move me to tears, when I came back seeing the window of my mother's room, and next at that which, in the better time, was mine. I was in Peggotty's arms, before I got to the door, and she took me into the house. Her grief burst out when she first saw me, but she controlled it soon, and spoke in whispers, and walked softly, as if the dead could be disturbed. She had not been in bed, I found, for a long time. She sat up at night still, and watched. As long as her poor dear pretty was above the ground, she said, she would never desert her. Mr. Murdstone took no heed of me when I went into the parlor where he was, but sat by the fireside, weeping silently, and pondering in his elbow chair. Miss Murdstone, who was busy at her writing desk, which was covered with letters and papers, gave me her cold finger nails, and asked me, in an iron whisper, if I had been measured for my mourning. I said, yes. Apostrophe, and your shirts, apostrophe, said Miss Murdstone. Have you brought 'em home? Apostrophe, apostrophe, yes, ma'am. I have brought home all my clothes. Apostrophe, this was all the consolation that her firmness administered to me. I do not doubt that she had a choice pleasure in exhibiting what she called her self-command, and her firmness, and her strength of mind, and her common sense, and the whole diabolical catalogue of her unamiable qualities, on such an occasion. She was particularly proud of her turn for business, and she showed it now in reducing everything to pen and ink, and being moved by nothing. All the rest of that day, and from morning to night afterwards, she sat at that desk, scratching composedly with a hard pen, speaking in the same imperturbable whisper to everybody, never relaxing a muscle of her face, or softening a tone of her voice, or appearing with an atom of her dress astray. Her brother took a book sometimes, but never read it that I saw. He would open it and look at it, as if he were reading, but would remain for a whole hour without turning the leaf, and then put it down and walk to and fro in the room. I used to sit with folded hands watching him, and counting his footsteps, hour after hour. He very seldom spoke to her, and never to me. He seemed to be the only restless thing, except the clocks, in the whole motionless house. In these days before the funeral, I saw but little of Peggotty, except that, in passing up or downstairs, I always found her close to the room where my mother and her baby lay, and except that she came to me every night, and sat by my bed's head, while I went to sleep. A day or two before the burial, I think it was a day or two before, but I am conscious of confusion in my mind about that heavy time, with nothing to mark its progress she took me into the room. I only recollect that underneath some white covering on the bed, with a beautiful cleanliness and freshness all around it, there seemed to me to lie embodied the solemn stillness that was in the house, and that when she would have turned the cover gently back, I cried, "Oh no, oh no!" apostrophe and held her hand. If the funeral had been yesterday, I could not recollect it better. The very air of the best parlor, when I went in at the door, the bright condition of the fire, the shining of the wine in the decanters, the patterns of the glasses and plates, the faint sweet smell of cake, the odor of Miss Murdstone's dress, and our black clothes. Mr. Chillip is in the room, and comes to speak to me. "And how is Master David?" apostrophe apostrophe he says, kindly. I cannot tell him very well. I give him my hand, which he holds in his. "Dear me!" apostrophe apostrophe says Mr. Chillip, meekly smiling, with something shining in his eye. "Our little friends grow up around us. They grow out of our knowledge, ma'am." Apostrophe apostrophe this is to Miss Murdstone, who makes no reply. "There is a great improvement here, ma'am." Apostrophe apostrophe says Mr. Chillip. Miss Murdstone merely answers with a frown and a formal bend. Mr. Chillip, discomfited, goes into a corner, keeping me with him, and opens his mouth no more. I remark this, because I remark everything that happens, not because I care about myself, or have done, since I came home. And now the bell begins to sound, and Mr. Omer and another come to make us ready. As Peggotty was wont to tell me, long ago, the followers of my father to the same grave were made ready in the same room. There are Mr. Murdstone, our neighbor Mr. Graper, Mr. Chillip, and one. When we go out to the door, the bearers and their load are in the garden, and they move before us down the path, and past the elms, and through the gate, and into the churchyard, where I have so often heard the birds sing on a summer morning. We stand around the grave. The day seems different to me from every other day, and the light not of the same color of a sadder color. Now there is a solemn hush, which we have brought from home with what is resting in the mold, and while we stand bareheaded, I hear the voice of the clergyman, sounding remote in the open air, and yet distinct and plain, saying, "I am the resurrection and the life, saith the Lord." Apostrophe apostrophe then I hear sobs, and, standing apart among the lookers-on, I see that good and faithful servant, whom of all the people upon earth I love the best, and unto whom my childish heart is certain that the Lord will one day say, "Well done." Apostrophe, there are many faces that I know, among the little crowd. Faces that I knew in church, when mine was always wandering there. Faces that first saw my mother, when she came to the village in her youthful bloom. I do not mind them, I mind nothing but my grief, and yet I see and know them all. And even in the background, far away, see Minnie looking on, and her eye glancing on her sweetheart, who is near me. It is over, and the earth is filled in, and we turn to come away. Before us stands our house, so pretty and unchanged, so linked in my mind with the young idea of what is gone, that all my sorrow has been nothing to the sorrow it calls forth. But they take me on, and Mr. Chillip talks to me, and when we get home, puts some water to my lips, and when I ask his leave, to go up to my room, dismisses me with the gentleness of a woman. All this, I say, is yesterday's event. Events of later date have floated from me to the shore, where all forgotten things will reappear, but this stands like a high rock in the ocean. I knew that Peggotty would come to me in my room. The Sabbath stillness of the time the day was so like Sunday, I have forgotten that, was suited to us both. She sat down by my side upon my little bed, and holding my hand, and sometimes putting it to her lips, and sometimes smoothing it with hers, as she might have comforted my little brother, told me, in her way, all that she had to tell concerning what had happened. She was never well, apostrophe said Peggotty, for a long time. She was uncertain in her mind, and not happy. When her baby was born, I thought at first she would get better, but she was more delicate, and sunk a little every day. She used to like to sit alone before her baby came, and then she cried. But afterwards she used to sing to it so soft, that I once thought, when I heard her, it was like a voice up in the air, that was rising away. I think she got to be more timid, and more frightened-like, of late, and that a hard word was like a blow to her. But she was always the same to me. She never changed to her foolish Peggotty, didn't my sweet girl? Apostrophe, here Peggotty stopped, and softly beat upon my hand a little while. The last time that I saw her like her own old self, was the night when you came home, my dear. The day you went away, she said to me, I never shall see my pretty darling again. Something tells me so, that tells the truth, I know. She tried to hold up after that, and many a time, when they told her she was thoughtless and light-hearted, made believe to be so, but it was all a bygone then. She never told her husband what she had told me. She was afraid of saying it to anybody else till one night, a little more than a week before it happened, when she said to him, My dear, I think I am dying. It's off my mind now. Peggotty, she told me, when I laid her in her bed that night. He will believe it more and more, poor fellow, every day for a few days to come, and then it will be past. I am very tired. If this is sleep, sit by me while I sleep. Don't leave me. God bless both my children. God protect and keep my fatherless boy. I never left her afterwards, apostrophe said Peggotty. She often talked to them too downstairs, for she loved them. She couldn't bear not to love anyone who was about her, but when they went away from her bedside, she always turned to me, as if there was rest where Peggotty was, and never fell asleep in any other way. On the last night, in the evening, she kissed me, and said, If my baby should die too, Peggotty, please let them lay him in my arms, and bury us together. It was done. For the poor lamb lived but a day beyond her. Let my dearest boy go with us to our resting place, she said, and tell him that his mother, when she lay here, blessed him not once, but a thousand times. Apostrophe, another silence followed this, and another gentle beating on my hand. It was pretty far in the night, apostrophe said Peggotty, when she asked me for some drink. And when she had taken it, gave me such a patient smile, the dear, so beautiful. Daybreak had come, and the sun was rising, when she said to me, how kind and considerate Mr. Copperfield had always been to her, and how he had borne with her, and told her, when she doubted herself, that a loving heart was better and stronger than wisdom, and that he was a happy man in hers. Peggotty, my dear, she said then, put me nearer to you, for she was very weak. Lay your good arm underneath my neck, she said, and turn me to you, for your face is going far off, and I want it to be near. I put it as she asked. And oh Davy, the time had come when my first parting words to you were true, when she was glad to lay her poor head on her stupid cross old Peggotty's arm, and she died like a child that had gone to sleep. Apostrophe, apostrophe, thus ended Peggotty's narration. From the moment of my knowing of the death of my mother, the idea of her as she had been of late had vanished from me. I remembered her, from that instant, only as the young mother of my earliest impressions, who had been used to wind her bright curls round and round her finger, and to dance with me at twilight in the parlor. What Peggotty had told me now, was so far from bringing me back to the later period, that it rooted the earlier image in my mind. It may be curious, but it is true. In her death she winged her way back to her calm untroubled youth, and cancelled all the rest. The mother who lay in the grave, was the mother of my infancy. The little creature in her arms, was myself, as I had once been, hushed forever on her bosom. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.